Hello. Today we're very glad to have invited my long-term old friend, Dr. Marketa Moore from the Czech Republic, to share with us some of her experience regarding her old lives in the old communist regime under the name that we may have forgot, Czechoslovakia, right? So when we talk about the communist era, of course there are many references that can be drawn upon the latest regime in Hong Kong. So we used to think that we understood the communist regime, but it seems that not really. So for our friends in Hong Kong, from Hong Kong, or our friends going to Hong Kong, this kind of experience would be really important for our mutual understanding with history, with the past, the present, and the future. So Makeda, thanks so much for your time. Can you please tell us a little bit about your old life in the old regime, Czechoslovakia? How does like And compare with the current situation in Hong Kong, do you think the two are having any kind of similarities?
Yeah, thank you for inviting me, Simon. Very nice to see you and hear you again. I think the comparison. I was born in 1968, and that was the year when Soviet army and army of Warsaw Pact invaded Czechoslovakia in August 21st. And according to my mom, that was the day when I first stood up. So it was like our family history that on that day when our country was invaded, that was the first day I stood up. So I grew up in the 1970s. And of course, after Prague Spring, the situation was very difficult, but I don't remember it, recall it as like personally. In 1970s, in primary school, as a small children, we were aware that there are things which we cannot say in school, that we have to be very careful. That there are certain things we can say only at home. So we learned that very quickly from small age. And as we grew up, we tried to survive within the system. But I was from very strongly a religious family. My family was there are Catholics, and so we were going to church. And my father and mother, they wanted us to have religious education, so we were going to secretly to learn in different village. To it was actually a priest who was a doctor of theology, so he was very smart man. And so we had private lesson, religious lesson, so that was very secretive. And then during holidays or during free time, we were also attending meetings and you can say summer camps organized by underground Catholic Church. So these things were happening, and we were aware that it's like top secret, but I think we were participating, and we knew that if something happened that there would be consequences. But I think in 1970s, 1980s, later on, I think situation became, I think, more relaxed. So people were trying to push boundaries a little bit more. But again, I think this kind of life was known to authorities that we were part of a Catholic Church. So for me, the consequence was that I was not allowed to study at university of my choice. I think that was one of the punishment people received if they didn't comply. They were not allowed to get to higher education. For example, my mother, she was not allowed to study at university because of her Catholic background. For me, it was, you can see the progress. For me, it was a little bit better. I was allowed to study at university, but not the university of my choice. I wanted to study medicine, so they said, okay, you can't study medicine, law, you can't become a journalist or teacher, and apart from that, you can study whatever you want. So it kind of limited my choices, and basically that led me to studying Chinese because that was one of the languages which started from zero. So I didn't have to have any previous knowledge, and I knew that they would send us to China for 1 year. And one of the thing was we couldn't travel freely at the time. So I think in Hong Kong situation is much better that people can leave still. Yeah, at the time we couldn't leave, we couldn't travel. We could travel only to neighboring communist countries. So we could travel to Poland. We have been to Poland 20 times, but for example, we couldn't go to Yugoslavia easily. That was already you need special permit to go to Yugoslavia. So for me to go anywhere would be perfect. So even China was very attractive to me. So I studied Chinese, and I started to study Chinese under communism, and that was very bizarre because we didn't start studying Chinese from basic words like hello, rice, I'm hungry, have you eaten? But we started from learning about Lenin in Chinese, and we learned about Taiwan, that Taiwan is part of China. So we even learned this kind of phrases and political slogans in Chinese. So that was very bizarre. It was for first 2 years of my study, and then they sent us to China for 1 year.
So back to your teenage in Czechoslovakia, you said some things that cannot be said, something that cannot be told, but soon everybody would realize the limits and what's the kind of taboo. How that can be done in reality?
I think we were very aware because our family, we always listen to Radio Free Europe or Voice of America, Radio Vatican. So we were very aware of the political situation and what about the taboos. But there were some families, of course there were people who were part of Communist Party, who were members of Communist Party, and their children, they were not very aware. So I remember that of course there was a list of forbidden books, basically all authors who wrote about communism or who emigrated, they were on the blacklist. And I remember that once my classmate, whose father was communist, she was just copying something for her reading journal, and she by mistake copied one forbidden book. She had no idea. So I think she learned that there were some forbidden books at the time. So I think for people who were part of the regime and who were members of Communist Party, they had a lot of advantages, and for them, I think they sometimes even didn't know about the taboos because they were not aware of it.
Regarding the potential consequences, if you are found out that you are reading some of the forbidden books or listen to the forbidden songs, and what would be the consequence?
I think when I was growing up, of course we knew that we couldn't listen to Radio Free Europe outside. So it was always at home. We always tried to be careful that nobody would hear us, that we are listening to the radio. But I think for us, we were not part of underground political movement. Yeah, we were living in a small town, living just very ordinary lives, and so they, I think, regime didn't see us as enemies as such. I think the only problem was our Catholic church and our Catholic beliefs, because that was kind of against the communist ideology. I think the main thing was that people couldn't study and that people couldn't travel, and these kind of restrictions. And I remember that once, I think when we were finishing high school, the last day, every class prepared some kind of performance for whole school. So we were going class to class, and we had songs which we sang, and our song was I want the words of the song were, I want to be a sun, I don't want to be a planet just orbiting around the sun. So there was clearly, I think, there was a political message there. So we managed to sing that song for several classes, but then we were stopped. They said, we can't sing that song anymore. So I think it was also useful for other classmates who didn't know that there was a hidden political message, for them to realize that there is something going on and there are some things which are not allowed.
You said you try to keep everything inside your home, which means it's suspected that your friends, your classmates, or your laborers might have some kind of reporting behavior to the regime. Is it a norm there at that time?
Yes, of course. I think the reason why I couldn't study medicine or go to university of my choice was that there was a report on our family. Yeah, there was a report that we go to church, that we are Catholic family, and as such, we are not suitable to become teachers or journalists or doctors or lawyers. Yeah, so there are some professions which were especially designed for people who were loyal to the party.
So these people would have the responsibility to spy on each other.
Yes, I think there was a special committee, like a community or street committee, which were writing reports on us. There was also one incident where my parents, they also loved to travel, but they couldn't. But I think at some point, I think when I was 10 years old, they managed to get a permit to go to Italy. And we couldn't go with them. It was just my parents, just two of them. And my parents, my father, he loved books. So he filled, on the way back, he filled the car with all the forbidden books and all the religious books. And I think somebody must have leaked it. So I think they were caught. All the books were confiscated, and they had a big problem. I think, I don't know whether their passport were confiscated as well. After that, they couldn't go anywhere anymore.
I see. So, how can you identify who are the ones who are re responsible of spying on you? I mean, are there any kind of symptom, any kind of symptom that can be identified from school, maybe? And say, if you're speaking to your schoolmates, when would be the moments that you are feeling that it's a bit weird? Maybe she is checking on me. So how can you identify the potential risk?
No. I think it was very subtle. It was very subtle. Actually, I know the name of the person who wrote the report on me, but I never met him. And I don't know whether we knew that before or whether we learned after that, because a lot of people, after the fall of communism, they just wanted to see. They went to their files and they found out who was the person who stopped them in their career or who made them fired or who managed to stop them from going to university. So I think we have that knowledge, but it was very subtle. It was you could not feel that anybody was spying on you, and it was not just one incident because we were going to church every Sunday, so everybody knew that. They probably didn't know about our secret religious lessons, but I think they knew that my father always refused to join Communist Party. My mother also. She couldn't study because, so I think they were kind of like on a blacklist anyway. Yeah, just so we knew that. I think you know that you are on the blacklist, kind of not official blacklist, but I think that you know that you are. We were not demonstrating against the party or doing anything radical, but we were just not complying.
But how can you know that who is the guy who is spying on you? Is that you know the name of that guy, but you have never met him. So how can you find out?
I think my parents told me because I think there was a big thing because I had very good results at school, and when I couldn't go to study medicine, it was I think a big thing even at the school, because they said that principal of the school called me and told me that, because she was very communist, like a Communist Party member, very active one, so she kind of like told me that I'm not loyal to the party, so I can't study medicine. So I think that was I think talk about it, and some teachers were kind of like very kind to me and kind of supportive. So I think because there was a talk about it, and they talk about who might have been who did that. Who reported? So I think it was leaked, and my parents told me.
I see. And what's the possible kind of worst consequence that could have happened if someone is being found on being disloyal to the party? Besides disallowing your good self to go to your wanted subject in the university, anyone would be sent to prison due to saying something stupid?
I think you may be reprimanded for saying something stupid, but I think definitely, I think if you do some demonstration against party, which was happening in Prague, yeah, people were demonstrating, people, and also I think if people had connections with friends outside, yeah, with their like foreign connection, they also they're under surveillance. So I think there was still connection going on. People were sending books, and people were sending out documents which they wanted the world to know about. So there was the connection was there, but I think that was very dangerous, and I think these people could end up in prison. Yeah.
I see. So the knowledge is that you cannot do any actual action, or else you could be sent to prison. However, if you are just voicing all your opinions in a subtle way, worst case, it's kind of.
And I think if you yeah also I think it's important to mention that it was before social media, yeah, so I think you actually don't express your opinion every day on social media, so I think authorities can't really read your mind that well, so I think it was easier I think to blend in and just to pretend that just do your work and do your studies and just and people I think they talk about some kind of a lot of people left, people who could leave left, but as I mentioned before, unlike Hong Kong, people were not allowed to leave, yeah, and if you left you were condemned and you were a traitor, and if you return you would go to prison because you left your country, so I think that was so I think that was trauma of these people. I met some of them afterwards, and they said it was trauma because you leave your country, your family, your friends, and you don't know whether you would be able to go back ever. Yeah, because if you go back, you would go to prison. So I think that was very traumatic for many people, and many people didn't leave because of that. I think my mother, she always wanted to leave, but my dad didn't. So I think that's why we probably never left. But people who couldn't leave, they talk about inner exile, that people were just disenfranchised or disconnected from the society because of everything what you hear in media and around, everything are lies and communist slogans and didn't make any sense, illogical statements. So people just switched off and just turned into their families, friends, into their cottages, living on the in the gardens. Czech people are avid gardeners, picking mushrooms, just finding simple pleasures in life. Something what state cannot control.
I see. So, which means whenever someone is leaving, the expectation is that he or she can never return, and that will be forever.
I think they at the end they could return, yeah, after 1989. But you don't know. I have friends who left in 1988, yeah, and so they could return maybe a year or 2 years later. But I have friends who left in 1960, so they couldn't return for almost yeah more than 20 years. And then they have parents who passed away, and just I think very traumatic, very traumatic experience for these people.
If someone is so-called illegally living, would their family members be affected?
Yes, of course. Yeah, we have one uncle who left for Austria, and I think we were not affected so much because we were not Communist Party members. But one of his brothers was very high up in Communist Party, And I think he lost his job because of that. He was, I think there was a pressure on other family members to convince him to come back. So they allow his mother, my grandmother, to go to Austria, try to convince him that he could still come back without punishment. But he said no, he wouldn't. And also pressure, I think, on his brothers to convince him to come back, but he didn't. So I think that uncle who was in Communist Party, in very high up, I think he suffered because of that.
I see, and you've mentioned the term internal exile. That is very interesting to us, because a lot of people in Hong Kong, they're just like living as an expat, without concerning the place as a place of our own. Is it the same meaning? I mean, in Czechoslovakia, people cannot live, but they are not agreeing with what's going on in the country. So what they can do is to find the minimal pressure from the area that they can control. And this is the kind of norm, right?
Everybody knew what you have to do just to survive, yeah, just to get by, just to and just to turn into, yeah. And I think you can do a lot of things in private, yeah. So people st could still, I think people still had those forbidden books, yeah. Then so they can, the books which we wanted to read and they were not available. For example, there was one book. So I remember that we were typing it on a typewriter, making 10 copies, and they were like sharing between friends. So at the time, there were still no copy machines, so it was really like the typing on a typewriter. Or so I think we resorted to these kind of things. Music also, there was music which was not allowed, but I think there was some underground illegal concerts. Some people, I think, in private, people can do a lot of things among their friends.